say to ourselves, look at another person and we just know this person will accomplish this thing, this person will be reliable. This attitude of having faith is again a strong influence, and it causes that person to respond by actually becoming what our good faith is. You see, if we don't have faith, it means that we have fear. It means that we have an expectation that things will go wrong. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Or we might have the attitude, this person can never change. I will never be able to work with this person. The differences are too much. There's no way it can work. Then we make that as a foregone conclusion, and we think that way. We create that atmosphere. And then it can't work because we have intended that it should not work. But by having faith and by looking for the uniting qualities, we're creating an atmosphere in which that actually takes place. Because the human mind, the human attitude, is extremely influential. And I think people don't really realize this. Now, when you study and practice spirituality, and you practice meditation, you actually become very aware of the power of the human mind and the power of the human attitude to transform circumstances and situations. When you turn your attention within and you focus on your own innate qualities, on the essential beauty and purity of the soul, and then you open yourself to the influence of the divine and fill yourself with that, your inner experience is such that not to have faith in people loses meaning. And to have faith in people seems only logical. There is an intuitive sense of the force of having faith in people that causes things to go well. When you practice spirituality, you also understand much more about subtlety. And you become aware that when you do have a thought of lack of appreciation, of doubt in another person, it creates a vibration of instability. It creates interference in the circumstances, the environment, which would otherwise allow your pure thought to become a practical reality. Then another element that's extremely important is to think of oneself more as a conduit for good things to happen rather than as the instigator. You see, because if we consider ourselves as a conduit, it means we're allowing something greater to pass through us and to occur. This is a very important part of spiritual purpose. It means that the intention behind which we do something is not based on what we might call a selfish motive, but why do we want to do something? Because it's good, because it makes sense, not because I want to do something, but rather I see that something, if it could happen, would be good. And the same eye that allows me to see that something would be good also allows me to see the other conduits that come together, and there becomes a dance of good things happening. Then what is the benefit experienced? When you do something good from a non-selfish perspective, what do you experience? Right away, there is a return for that action, which we study in terms of karma philosophy. But there is an immediate experience that when you do the right thing, the obvious good thing, in conjunction with others, one thing happens, you experience happiness. A kind of happiness that you can't quite put your finger on its source, but you know that whenever you do something of this quality, that happiness always comes to you. Second thing is, it brings you closer to the other people. And when you have a feeling of your uniqueness, your independence, together with the warmth of that closeness, then it's a perfect balance. And when you have that perfect balance, you feel that life is good. So on the one hand, there is that ease of working together with others, of coexisting with other people, coming together for a task, moving apart, coming together with others. It's as if life is really a beautiful dance. You have your moments of solitude, your moments of activity, your moments of watching others act. And always you are appreciating what you're experiencing, the qualities of other people, the warm feeling of kinship. And it's not a dependent kind of a feeling. And it's not one based upon a sense of not knowing who you are, but it's very complementary to the inner solitary experience in your meditation, which is expressed in community as you come into action from that inner spiritual place. And then you begin to have value for the family, value for the community. And you look at everyone with that eye that sees the speciality. And when you see another one's speciality, it's an expression of love. When you express love to another, what happens is that love is returned to you. And so unity is something that is created out of a give and take of love, which comes without some hidden agenda, some other purpose that you would have in mind. Why wouldn't you have any other purpose? Because you feel comfortable with exactly who you are. Why? Because you open yourself to a source of sustenance. That means that you are never compelled to use the energy of other people to complete yourself. But you sustain yourself in your meditation. You draw from the divine and you extend that and it comes back to you. So there's a flowing movement in a very, very subtle way that also corresponds to the dance of interaction. And at the end of the day, what you feel is very, very good to be you. And you appreciate all those who are with you, and you also appreciate yourself. You take your time of solitude, your time of community, your time of watching, your time of doing, and you have an instinctive, intuitive sense of when to be what, for how long. It's a very, very lovely feeling. And then take a step back and just watch. Watch what is accomplished. And because of your subtlety, because of your spiritual practice, you're able to see things on a variety of levels. I mean, you'll see physically what's right in front of you, and that is amazing enough. But what you'll also see is that very invisible, subtle connectivity that occurs between yourself and the others who you are working with in the pursuit of accomplishing a higher purpose. And you find that each individual who's part of that contains a microcosm of the whole, and that is in your heart. So anyone coming to you will experience not just only you as an individual, but they'll also experience in a very subtle way that your qualities as an individual are set in the context of the bouquet of the others with whom you are working. So now the question is, what can we do to sustain this, maintain this? How do we encounter the inevitable challenges that come to us to try to break this? Again, I would draw our attention to the special quality of faith. See, faith in self, that I am good, that I can accomplish what I understand myself to be here to accomplish. Faith in the others. It's a beautiful spiritual law that says that whoever you are with is exactly the right one or the right ones that you need to be with. And have that vision that each and every person that you are connected with has a very important and beautiful lesson to teach you. Sometimes you may experience difficulty in a relationship, but that difficulty is only there as long as we haven't discerned exactly what is the beneficial purpose of why that person and this person are coming together. As soon as we've understood it, as soon as that's become clear, all the difficulties fade away and there is a very beautiful experience of harmony. The key to this is, of course, to maintain the practice of introspection. Keep looking within, keep focusing on those special qualities, and keep knowing that the spiritual laws that tell us that the quality of unity is the most valuable quality that we can develop. And even though it sometimes might perplex you, just keep working with it and you will see the solution, you will get the clarity, and at the end of the day, that is experienced as the most valuable quality and treasure. Om Shanti. Shanti. Here at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University in Rajasthan, India, we are working to create a value-based society. And for that, we look closely at, we study, we practice, we experiment with different values. Today, I would like to take a closer look at the value we call love. You could say it's a value, a quality, a virtue, a feeling, and it's so subtle, it's so intangible, but yet what happens within an individual is there is this tremendous desire to feel love, to be loved, to be surrounded by love, because love indicates security, and people have needs, spiritual needs. But what happens because of a more materialistic consciousness or physical consciousness, we have a tendency to try to get our spiritual needs met through physical means, and what happens is invariably disappointment, disillusionment, perhaps even betrayal and loss. And so in the pursuit of these wonderful spiritual qualities, we end up with slightly ambivalent feelings about them. On the one hand, there is this desire. On the other hand, the memories of the disillusionments, the disappointments, the hurts that are associated especially with that subtle, ephemeral quality of love. So the first most important thing is to identify it clearly and squarely as a spiritual quality. That means that we will focus our attention on our own spirit and recognize that it is in this dimension of our being that we can experience love, that we can encounter love, that we can create love in its purest form. So meditation is, of course, a very important ingredient in the discovery and sustenance and development of that wonderful quality of love. Because love is something that wells up from within. But love is also that sustaining quality of life, which, when it becomes depleted, leaves a person feeling empty, needy, and dependent. And so most people are looking for love, in the pursuit of love, and it sometimes becomes like a dream. So on the one hand there's this beautiful ideal, and on the other hand a kind of certainty that perhaps they'll never have it, perhaps they don't deserve it. And so this ambivalence creates almost a state where even if love is given, you can't really take it in. So one thing is to learn how to give love in its purest form, and the other is how to receive it. And so love is really an expression of the give and take of something very pure between people. Problem is, there's been so much give and take that has been compromised that it's very difficult for us to figure out, well, how do we do this in a pure way? What kind of attitude should we have? What criteria do we use to measure the caliber of love that we're working with? How do we know if we are actually not dealing in love, but in some masquerade that is pretending to be love? Because mostly what happens is people feel love for something or someone. They call it love, but if you check it out, you will find that it's more like desire. So now, if you would call it like it is, and say, well, what I'm feeling is desire, then you'd have to check yourself and say, well, is this good? You know, is it right for me to desire? What do I desire? Do I want to draw on someone else's energy? Do I want to have something so it will make me feel better? You see, this feeling of desire, we have a tendency to call it love. Oh, I love your dress, I love your shoes, or I love this person. All of these expressions, we use the word love, and what we really mean is, I want. So that means we're coming from a place of neediness, and we are deceiving ourselves by saying, I love it. You know? If somebody says to you, I love you, I love you, I love you, think about it. Do they love you, or do they want something from you? Because really, if someone loves you, they probably wouldn't need to tell you. They would just show it. So we need to take a look at what are the indicators of real love. And one very important indicator is selflessness. When someone gives of their own qualities, of their own time, their energy, their treasure freely, without expecting anything back, purely out of a sense that they want to share something with others, they want to benefit other people, that is love. When something is shared, but yet there is that sense, well, what am I going to get in return? that's not love. That's dealing. That's business. And there's nothing wrong with business, but if you call it love, then again, there's self-deception and there's deceptiveness in one's dealing with others, and therefore there is so much disappointment around the use of the word love because we use it inappropriately. We use the word so freely to mean so many different things that we have lost our inner discernment and discrimination. So part of the importance of a spiritual study and a spiritual practice is really to take another look at these words, these concepts, these values, qualities and virtues, and ask ourselves, do I really understand this? Do I know what this means? We live in a world which likes to take advantage of the loss of understanding and the mix-up in the use of this word love. But yet, it's so important for us to just take the time to sit with a word like love and ask ourselves, you know, do I know what it means? Do I have love? Do I love? How do I know whether I love? You know, we don't ask ourselves these questions very often. And so meditation is very useful because it prompts us to really sit with this and think about it. Do I even know what love feels like? Because if I have always been thinking of love as desire or attachment or attraction, then I probably haven't had that much experience of love. I've had plenty of experience of desire, attachment, and attraction. But by calling it love, then I have to admit to myself that I don't really have a clue what love is. I've just been working with desiring, getting attracted, getting attached, wanting, being needy, being greedy. And so then love becomes all of a sudden something rather mysterious. And so, okay, let it be mysterious, but let me go inside and look and seek and discover and experiment. And so one of the wonderful things about meditation, we take our energy, our sense of self, turn it within and really focus on the soul, that inner spark of light, which is inherently pure, peaceful and loving. And by focusing the energy of my mind on my own soul, the one thing that you can experience is what love actually feels like. And that's very revealing, very wonderful. So you begin to experience what it is to be a loving person. And definitely when someone shows love to you, you recognize it, you feel it. Sometimes if there's been a lot of disappointments, you may not trust it. That's another issue that comes up around love a lot. Because so often, you probably have had experiences of people claiming to love you and then betraying you or disappointing you or not coming through. And then you associate love from others with loss, disappointment, and betrayal. And so therefore, you don't trust it. So part of the experimentation and discovery of love also produces a discovery of trust. So love and trust are very, very connected. How do we increase our sense of love? Another thing that meditation will do is allow us in that state of soul consciousness to turn the mind beyond, upwards, and focus on the divine source of love. Because one thing that's generally accepted, you know, in so many different cultures, is God is love. So if there's a focus on that which is beyond, in an understanding that that quality, that value is to be found from that source, then just focus, open up and see what happens. One of the things we experience a great deal is that when you do this in a very loving way, it will be reciprocated, and you will experience as if there is a fountain of love pouring over your being, and that feeling of spiritual love is unique, is special, is beautiful. And what it makes you feel is sustained, enriched, energized, and very filled. Love is a nurturing quality. And so they speak of probably the purest love in the human world is always called a mother's love. It's completely giving, it's completely selfless, and it doesn't look at whether the child's beautiful or not, intelligent or not. None of those criteria apply. Just simply, this is my child and I love this child. And this experience so many of us have had in our deep down memories. And so when somebody does come along and gives you real true love, you're going to recognize it. And it's this recognition which is so important, because through recognizing it, when you really find it accurately, you're able to rebuild your ability to discern and discriminate between something that really is love and something that's masquerading as love. And then you find that you start to use the word accurately. And if you find yourself desiring something, you will stop saying, I like that thing. And you will know that what you're really feeling is, I want that thing. Then you ask yourself, why do I want that thing? Do I want it because I'm attracted? Or do I want it because it's necessary for me? Because the desire for something that's attractive is going to deceive you. And recognizing the usefulness of something necessary, that doesn't any longer fit in the category of desire, but it goes back to that aspect of recognition. And then you wouldn't say, I love that thing, I want that thing. You would say, yeah, that thing is necessary, so we'll take that because it's necessary, it's useful. And the emotional bondage to those representations of love, those symbols of desire, doesn't exist. And so your interaction with things and people doesn't become an interaction that creates a bondage, but rather an interaction that's based on clarity, freedom, and understanding. So a person who is loving, who has that selflessness, who recognizes love when it comes their way, is able to receive it. Such a person, because of that clear recognition, doesn't have a problem of trust. Trust problems arise when you don't recognize. You can't tell the difference between a desire, an attachment, an attraction, a necessity, being needy, or a mutual beneficial interaction. And so it's a simple little word, simple little four-letter word, but yet so immensely misunderstood. Now, what we want for our own selves is to become more loving. And so we have to take a look and see, what is it inside ourselves that makes us less loving? We need to be able to evaluate that. And in fact, if there is this mistrust, it will stop us from loving. And so then we have to work through trust issues. Maybe there may be some very good reason why we don't trust, from the past perhaps. Or maybe we had a bad experience with someone, and then we have to ask ourselves, if I had one bad experience of someone, does that mean that I'm going to mistrust everyone. You know, I'm taking it too far if I do that. So I have to be able to have that generosity, which is able to be forgiving of those who do betray me or disappoint me. And so for that, I have to have an accumulation of a stock of love in my own heart. So what happens if I do a lot of actions that are based on love, that are based on service, that are based on giving, that I freely share and distribute whatever my treasures are? What happens to me is it keeps on coming back and coming back and coming back. And it takes the form of an ability to be generous. If you don't have anything, how can you be generous? But if you've been accumulating over a long period of time, the generosity is automatically and necessarily available. And so with that generosity, you become able to forgive. So forgiveness is a very important aspect of love. We have expectations of ourselves and expectations of people. But in fact, expectations get in the way of us being able to love ourselves or to love others. And of course, it's good to have expectations of ourselves, but those expectations have to be within reason. It has to be sustainable, manageable, doable. But what happens when a person is depleted in their inner stock of love is very often it will take the form of having great expectations of the self, and then we give ourselves a hard time. That is not very loving. When we give ourselves a hard time, or we start feeling very guilty about small mistakes that we might make, this is a kind of aggression against the self. Sometimes we may try to discipline ourselves with force. This is also not loving. You know, certain people believe that spiritual development means you have to be rather hard on yourself. But we have to question that. If I'm hard on myself, is it because of being lacking in love for myself or what? Because I have to respect myself, I have to honor myself, and loving myself means that I will select to do those activities that move me forward in my spiritual evolution. And if I give myself suffering, if I'm harsh to myself, if I push myself too hard, then I have to recognize that is not being loving to myself. And if I'm not loving to myself, how can I be loving to other people? So what is it that makes us not be loving towards ourselves? Part of the reason could be very easily that we live in a society in which that spiritual quality of love for the self and love for one another is in short supply. And so we become simply influenced by that. We're used to that. And so we take it for normal and we don't do anything about it. But once we start examining it, thinking about it, investigating it, and experiencing it, what happens? We reevaluate our preconceptions, and we find that that's exactly what they are. Preconceptions. Material that's been absorbed from perhaps a harsh environment at the level of love. And having thought about it deeply, having experienced it internally, and having developed the quality of love through giving and sharing, things change in here and also in the heart. You know, if you don't experience love, your heart will close down and freeze over. But as you start to experience it and exchange it, it starts to melt and open like a very beautiful flower. And instead of being just a nice idea, it becomes a reality. and it becomes a nurturing force that's flowing towards yourself and towards the world. And you begin to believe in love more because you understand it and you distinguish clearly what is really love from what is just masquerading as love. And again, what happens is that you exude that special quality, which is a nurturing force as well as an example for people around you. If you're loving, you're not greedy. If you're loving, you have no need to be ego-based or fear-based. If you're loving, you'll be generous and you will never be lacking or wanting for anything. And so take some time to think about this very lovely quality in a whole new way and just see what difference